Hey folks, before we get to our next episode, I wanted to ask if you've ever considered leaving a tip for Word Balloon in the past and didn't, I could really use your help this month. July is always an expensive month with San Diego Comic-Con, but it's always provided dividends down the road. When it comes to making new creator connections for future Word Balloon episodes, San Diego has always been a big boost to the podcast. So this month in particular, if you can swing a couple dollars, do me a favor. Go to the front page of wordballoon.com, hit the donate button, and give what you can. Check out our front page of Word Balloon, and you'll see the contribution drop box there, right under the symbol for the League of Word Balloon listeners. As always, thank you for your support and for listening. Now, on to the show. In association with iFanboy, welcome again to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. John Suntress here, and back from San Diego Comic-Con with a con hangover so bad that I'm just now able to conjugate verbs. Man, I'm telling you, even coming back to radio, it was tough reading copy and stuff. But had a great time to wrap up and review the San Diego Comic-Con. A great treat today. A nice open conversation with Art Baltazar and Mike Norton talking about what happened at the con. Of course, Mike won his first Eisner, first nomination, first award for Battle Pug. Artie, of course, always busy as hell in the small press area, cranking out drawings and selling books, not only Tiny Titans, but a lot of his previous catalog as well. But great observations. Of course, we had star encounters, interesting panels, and we discuss it on the first portion of Word Balloon. Then I present the 2012 Comics Podcast panel. I've been a proud representative of that for four of the 7 years that we've been doing the podcast panel, and I was very happy to be on the panel with members of iFanboy, Cammy's Comic Corner, Loikamania, Comic News Insider, Comic Book Page, and is that it? And Word Balloon. I think that's it. If I'm missing somebody, you're going to hear it in the introductions. But we had a nice open discussion about what's going on in podcasting as we look back over our 7 years and the changes in the business. As always, it's always an interesting discussion. And very happy that our pals from Comic Book Page, John Mayo and Bob Rital, were able to record it properly because my recording screwed up. But they were kind enough to allow me to use their copy and present it to you today on Word Balloon. It's all brought to you today by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com. Wonderful savings are waiting for you. So many new books were already announced at San Diego. Eventually, you'll find them at InStockTrades.com for up to 42% off the standard retail price. Lots of great deals going on this week at InStock Trades. For instance, you can get West Coast Avengers Family Ties at 40% off, just $17.99. The first volume of Batwing, The Lost Kingdom, is 40% off, just $8.99. You can get the Case Closed graphic novel, volume 43, for just $6.99. FF Volume 2 from John Hickman is $11.99. How about a showcase from DC, Rip Hunter Time Master, 40% off, just $11.99. Those are the kinds of deals you can get at InStockTrades.com. Check them out because you'll not only find the deals I was talking about, but also you can find other artists or writers or publishers or titles, a wonderful power search function that they have at the website that you can take advantage of, and find the books you're looking for at a price you won't believe. InStockTrades.com. All right, let's pick things up with our pals. Art Baltazar, of course, you know Art from his fine work on Tiny Titans, Superman Adventures, Patrick the Wolf Boy, so many of Art's own creations. Of course, he's also a co-star on the Aw Yeah podcast with Art and Franco, where I caddy for the boys. So it's kind of a hybrid, part Word Balloon, part Aw Yeah podcast. And we get our favorite artist on there, Mike Norton, to join us and bask in his celebration and glory winning that Eisner for Best Digital Comic. So everybody is, like I said, a little hungover from the con, but, you know, funny stories and good observations from the guys on this portion of Word Balloon.
We on the air now, Johnny?
We are on the air right now, Arthur, and welcome to Art Baltazar. Welcome, Mike Norton. All of us, I wouldn't say fresh from San Diego, because we're all beat in various degrees of being, I think, wiped out. But gentlemen, thank you for joining me quickly today.
Sure.
Yeah, man. You're awesome, Ben.
Mike, congratulations.
Thank you.
Huge. That's fantastic, man. Honestly, that's great. Your first time nominated?
Oh, yeah. I've never been nominated for anything.
That's awesome, man. So, and Artie's an old Eisner vet himself.
Yeah, I got two.
Like seven of them.
Yeah.
It's like Yeah, it's like Marissa Tomei talking to, you know, Meryl Streep or whatever.
Yeah. Marissa.
How about that?
What's that mean?
Was that fan for Celia or Burnham?
That's all of them. They're all here.
All right.
Oh, yeah, man.
Four Star Studios.
Yeah.
Dick on Street.
I can't.
Yay. Hey.
This is an Eisner Award-winning podcast right now, Johnny.
I think so. Absolutely. Yeah. So, Mike, real fast, you descended on San Diego like a commando Saturday morning?
Actually, it was Friday night, but yeah, okay. It was very commando. I didn't have underwear on.
Yeah. Did you have a pug under your arm, Mike?
No.
Jumping from an airplane?
No. They wouldn't let me in the Dunkin' Donuts the other day, by the way,
really?
With my dog.
That's ridiculous.
Just thought I'd mention that.
No, you feel free. That's all right. It's a free form conversation, Mike. I'm
trying to go to Starbucks.
But yes, I came in on Friday.
Who presented your category? Do you remember?
Holy crap. Now I'm going to sound like an idiot. No, it was Bill Morrison.
Oh, nice.
Oh, he did it himself and with his lovely wife.
Yeah.
Okay. I wasn't sure if they had special guest presenters or whatever.
Oh, they did. They just presented the first three, and then there were other presenters.
So you were among the first three?
Yeah, I was actually the third one, yeah.
Wow, that's crazy. Okay, cool. And by the way, obviously regrets to fellow nominees, especially our dear friend Katie Cook.
Oh, she wasn't nominated. She's nominated for Harvey.
For Harvey. Yeah. Yeah, I thought so too, and they told me at the show. She said, no, it's for Harvey.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, again, regrets to those who were nominated, but I'm very happy that our friend won.
I did go up to Katie at San Diego, and I yelled at her, "You're going down at the Harveys," and she just looked at me like I had attacked her, and I felt terrible about it.
Aww.
So you're sorry after that? I'm sorry.
I did.
Sorry, Katie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hilarious. So yeah, Mike. So you came in. You did the Harveys. Did you? I know you hung out on Saturday at the con. We hung out. We saw Mark Evanier and kind of had lunch with him.
Yeah, first time I had ever met him.
That was really cool. And I'm going to follow up. I'm kind of giving everybody except for my local friends in Chicago a break and not bugging them the week after the con.
Yeah.
Because like you guys deal with me anyway, and can you always just tell me, you know, go to hell. I don't want to talk.
Good thing for you, the chips emerging right there.
Can you get that text?
Yeah, I guess. Here it comes. All right, it's buzzing in now. Fantastic.
One of my highlights of the weekend was hugging Mike Norton after he won.
That was one of my highlights.
I couldn't let go of you. Yeah, I was so proud. I felt it in my heart and my soul.
I didn't. Yeah. It didn't really actually sink in until you guys showed up.
That was great. It's like, yeah, our guy won. We heard about Mike's award during dinner, and we all heard at the same time, and we all cheered, and the restaurant looked at us funny, but it was pretty cool. Yeah, we're in San Diego. It was surrounded by comic book people, so it was a good time.
That's cool. I was in the airport terminal because I was taking the red eye back, and I'm like, hey, that's excellent. The lady's like, what? I'm like, shut up.
I like the idea of John getting in a fight at the airport.
Oh, I'll pick a fight with anybody, man. You know that. I was just doing it today on Twitter about the poor Twilight lady that got killed by that sad auto accident.
Yeah.
Really?
And, you know, well, someone was saying, what's San Diego going to do about it? The con. And I'm like, you know, that's not the con's fault. That's one unfortunate person that made a bad choice.
So somebody, an actor from Twilight?
No, it was a fan. And for listeners who may not have heard, what happened was it was on Tuesday. People were already lining up as they have the last few years for the Twilight panel.
Yeah.
2 days later, you know, on Thursday, but this was on Tuesday morning, they had asked that the line move because it was getting in the way of traffic or it was just becoming a problem. So people were crossing the street, and unfortunately this woman crossed against the traffic light, slipped and fell, and a truck hit her.
Man.
And she bled to death, unfortunately. Aww. And it's very sad, but this is, I believe, you know, you got to calm down and realize, you know, hey, she's trying to keep her line in place . That's not cool.
Yeah.
That's just, you know, that was a bad choice. And I'm very sorry that she passed away.
Yeah, that's right.
But I also, that was, you know, not a smart move. You don't, yeah. you know, don't go against traffic. All right, enough of the downer. But onto fun things. What were some of the big moments, Artie, for you at the con this year?
Buying the Tiny Titans toys was pretty cool.
Did you see that, Mike?
I didn't see them. I saw them in pictures.
Yeah.
Didn't see them there.
And when I got Artie, when I went to pick, because we ordered pre-order, and then when we went to go pick them up at the hotel, I saw the pallet of toys, and it was cool. I took a picture and threw it on the Twitter or Facebook and stuff.
Yeah.
And that was really cool. It was just awesome. And talking to the Mattel guys after that was kind of cool, but I can't say what we talked about, you know, because it's always secret. Everything's secret in comics is always secret, you know. But that was a good time.
Excellent.
We didn't really have a lot of meetings this year, but we had a lot of like panels and kid stuff, and we did the shout out on G4 was awesome.
Oh, and, really?
We did a segment on G4. It made it on G4 for 52 seconds, but I like that word 52. It's good. Like it.
It's good. I like it a lot.
52 seconds. And but we they interviewed us and showed the Mattel toy, and we got up there, and I kept getting a lot of messages that people saw it. And I know my family knows that I go to Comic-Con, so a lot of my aunts and uncles were sending me emails and text messages saying that they saw the segment on TV. So it was pretty cool. Yeah.
It was kind of bizarre for me because I had come home on the red eye and went and visited friends Sunday morning. And I was watching the G4 coverage.
Oh, cool.
So it felt bizarre that I'm like, wow, 24 hours ago I was there, and now I'm watching it on TV. So that was kind of weird. Mike, what any standout, like celebrity meetings or anything like that, either at the Eisners or in the 2 days or two and a half days that you were there?
Well, the Eisners was the big thing for me. The other big thing was I did a signing with Mike Allred. And
awesome.
He was super awesome to me. He was... I don't know what I would have expected otherwise. I mean, he was just a great guy, and he was like you, Artie. He was just excited about
just and, doing stuff. Yeah,
just really cool. He was very complimentary about Battle Pug and Revival, and he kept telling everybody to go buy it when we were signing, which was very cool of him. So.
Yeah, man.
Did you do signings on Sunday as well?
No, I only just did the. I never did a signing for Battle Pug. They sold out at the Dark Horse booth.
Fantastic.
So, I never did a Dark Horse thing.
Okay, so were you signing for Image or?
Yeah, we were at the Image booth. Yeah,
that's cool. Hey, what kind of feedback have you been getting on Revival? I mean, I've certainly seen the critical feedback, which has been so good. Yours and Tim Seeley's series that just began this month.
Shout out to Tim Seeley. Hey.
See, they're not hip to all the secret handshakes or anything, Artie.
It's all right. They will be.
In fact, this could qualify, wondering what that was, as a Mike Norton mystery.
Yeah.
I just learned about this thing.
The Eisner Award-winning Mike Norton mysteries.
Now, and you guys already know this because I saw you after the fact, but I'll say it for the listeners. My big like geek out moment was meeting George Clayton Johnson. And I know everyone listening is like, who the hell is George Clayton Johnson? I'll explain. He was one of the original Twilight Zone writers. And he wrote episodes like Kick the Can and A Game of Pool with Jack Klugman and Jonathan Winters. He did one of the Dick York episodes called Penny for Your Thoughts, where Dick York flips a newspaper guy of Penny and it sits on edge and he can read everybody's minds for the day. Just really interesting Twilight Zones. And he was a contemporary of Ray Bradbury's. He also co-wrote Logan's Run.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Now I'm hearing some gasps. Exactly. And he wrote the short story that became the basis for the original Ocean's 11.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
So, and he also wrote the first episode that aired on Star Trek. He wrote The Man Trap. That was the one where Dr. McCoy's old girlfriend, and she's really an alien that like wants the salt from everybody's human bodies.
Ew.
Yeah, it's an icky episode, but it was a classic. But yeah, so I went to James Robinson's spotlight panel, and as it was ending, the people were getting ready for the next panel, and I see this older gentleman kind of shuffling up. He's 84 years old. And the only reason why I recognized him and know him as by seeing him was I had just watched a video interview he did for the American Television Academy that's doing those oral histories of television. They've been doing it for 15 years. And I was curious about him because of his body of work and that he was one of the living Twilight Zone writers. I mean, how many of them are left? Really, him and Richard Matheson, I think, are the only two that are left.
I didn't know Richard Matheson was there.
Yeah. So, Richard Matheson, of course, I Am Legend, Nightmare on, at 10,000 Feet. Anyway, so I see him, and immediately I'm like, okay, I know at the end to come back up here at the end of this panel and try and get a photo with him. And I couldn't contain myself. I even before the panel started, walked up to the dais and went right up to him and I said, "Mr. Johnson, I don't mean to bother you. I just want to tell you what a big fan I am." And his eyes were like all twinkly and everything, so he was happy that I did that. So then I go downstairs and I was telling Art and Franco. They have no idea who I'm talking
about. I still don't know, Johnny. Even you explained it all. I'm still really confused. I heard the buzzwords like Star Trek Twilight Zone. Okay, I got you. I'm there.
That's good enough. Yeah.
It's kind of like listening to...
The only way it could have been better is if he was a boxer, too.
Oh, yeah.
This is true. I found Andy Parks at the Oni booth. And I'm like, "Andy, you got to come with me. You're going to want a picture with this guy." And he said the same thing. "Who the hell's George Clayton Johnson?" And then I ran through his resume. He's like, "Oh, my God, that guy. Okay, cool." So we ran up and it was hilarious. We were like two kids. And we went up to him after his panel. And we felt bad, too, because it was a memorial for one of the founders of Comic-Con. And that's like kind of crashing a wake or a funeral.
Yeah.
Bill Murray! Let's get Bill Murray's signature! So I felt bad. So we waited until, obviously, the panel was over and he's walking off. And he was there with his son. And I said, "Excuse me, can we say hi to your dad?" And he's like, "Oh, absolutely." So, you know, once again, I'm like, "Mr. Johnson, thanks a lot. Really enjoy your work." And Parks had the right things to say. He's like, "Oh, sir, I can't tell you how much you're... television and movies have meant to me and everything." So go, "Thanks a lot, boys," because we're both in our 40s and he's in his 80s, so we are boys to him. Yeah. And then I took the picture of him and Andy, and I put it on Twitter. He looks like Gandalf. He's very, or he looks. Another observation by Parks was he looked like Lo Pan from Big Trouble in Little China. Yeah.
Does he have a long beard?
He does. He's got white hair and a long beard, and he wears a straw hat that kind of looks like an Asian. You know, hat kind of thing.
Like an Asian ZZ Top kind of thing.
Kind of like you'd be like in an opium den hanging out and stuff and conjuring dragons or spirits or something like that. But he was very cool. And I think he was like kind of the beatnik generation, I guess. But yeah, other than that, I mean, like that was my I can't keep my reporter demeanor and be like, "Hey, how you doing? Nice to meet you. Yeah, sure. Very nice. I admire your work." I'm like, "Mr. Johnson, I'm a fan." So
awesome.
Olsen moment. So, yeah. Any others? I mean, I've got other celebrity signings. How about you guys? Sighting, I should say.
I don't know.
Yeah, I got a few, but I don't know if I want to save them for the podcast or unload them here. You know,
you got two different. Oh, you're gonna hold on to me, Artie?
Tell you. I freaked out when I saw we were at a DC party, and we saw Chris Daughtry was the house band. So it was kind of cool to see him. And he sang the song that the DC is doing for Africa and all this stuff. But I freaked out when I saw Andrea Romano. She's the voice caster for all the DC cartoons and animation and stuff. And so I saw her and I went, oh my God. And then my wife says, "Why are you blushing? Why are you shaking?" And I said, "Andrea Romano's here." And she's like, "Who's that?" And she turned and saw her. And she, you know, we've been watching her since Batman Animated Series. I think she was the voice of Slappy Squirrel, too, on Animaniacs.
Oh, wow.
And so, yeah, she's awesome. And I think she's hot, too. So I had to immediately go up to her and just say who I was. It was cool to meet her. It was a thrill. It was like one of the geek out moments that didn't happen to me in a long, long time. But I told her who I was, and she knew what Tiny Titans was, and I asked her if we could make a movie, and she'll say, "Yeah, I'll look into it." So that's the first thing. "Can we make a movie with Tiny Titans?" No. So that was really cool. And then I met we're at this party, and you just know when actors walk into rooms that they're actors, even if you don't know who they are. And because there was two guys there, One guy was there, and I walked up to him and said, you know, I know you're an actor because you look amazing. You're the best looking man in the room. And he says, I'm Oliver Queen on Arrow. So he's the new guy who plays Green Arrow.
Very cool.
And so I hung out with him a little bit and talked to him. And then I turned around, and it was another amazing man. This guy looked – he was a little taller, a little more muscular. And I talked to him, too. I said, are you a famous actor? He goes, I'm trying to be. I said, you look incredible. He says, come on, let's take a picture. That's what he said. So I asked him, what do you do? And he goes, I've been running like a vampire for the last 5 years. And I said, oh, what? And what? He says, I'm on Twilight. I'm in Twilight movies. I'm like, oh, I haven't seen those. And he says, yeah, I didn't think you would. And so I took a picture with him. I forgot what his name was, but he was a blonde guy, handsome face. And I threw it up on my cousin's Facebook page because they know she's around 20 or 21. So she would freak out about this guy. But I haven't heard from her. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But I'm sure that when I go to the barbecue in August, that I'm going to be the talk of the party. Like, oh, he knows the Twilight guys, you know. So so it was pretty cool. You know, when you go to the DC parties, Warner parties or whatever, you never know who's going to show up. And it was kind of cool.
Very cool. Like Mike, anybody? Any? I like it a lot. I like it. It's good. I like Chris Daughtry singing a song about needy people. It's good.
That's right. Rescue Me, I think it's called. Or Rescue Him or something. Rescue.
Rescue him. Rescue him.
Rescue them. Rescue is definitely in the name.
Mike, any celebrity sightings?
I don't get invited to the DC parties anymore.
Yeah, but even just walking around like the con, and that's one of the things I love about San Diego. You run it like Brent Spiner just walking by. Hey, how you doing? Nice to see you.
Well, yeah. I saw a bunch of people. I just can't think of any off the top of my head. Nobody that I like had to push anybody down to get a better look at.
A few years ago, I met Richard Dreyfuss. He was walking the floor. Yeah, but wow. he had a baseball cap on. It was kind of low, but he was walking just casually through the thing, and he walked by our table, and I knew he was kind of like just trying to casually walk by and not get noticed. I didn't want to talk to him too much, but I said hi to him. Because they probably were showing something, Jaws, maybe 20th anniversary or something. But he was there. Yeah. It was cool.
That's cool. I went to – on Friday night, because I was leaving right after the con on Saturday and wanted to make sure that I did a lot of booking on Saturday. I didn't go out and hang out at the bars or anything Friday night. So I stayed for a Cinemax panel on that show Strike Back, which I love. And it's that great action show, and it's totally a Cinemax show, so you got a lot of kill shots to the head, a lot of gunshot wounds to the head on this show, and also a lot of breasts. So it's an interesting combination of violence and sex and everything on this show. But their panel was interesting. After that, I walked to the Hilton because I really haven't had a chance to look at the Batmobiles, and all the Batmobiles were on display from the Adam West Batmobile.
That was kind of cool.
It was awesome. Yeah. So I walked over to take pictures. And I see a guy by himself in a hockey jersey taking pictures of all the Batmobiles. And it's Kevin Smith.
Yeah.
So, and he was by himself. He didn't have any people around him. So I waited till he was done taking pictures. And I said, excuse me, I know I'm interrupting this religious moment for you. And he laughed. And he said, it is a religious moment for me. And I introduced myself and said, hey, I'm John Suntress. I have a podcast called Word Balloon. And his eyes got big. He's like, oh, I know who you are. He goes, yeah, our listeners want us to get together. And I'm like, yeah. I said, so if you got time in a couple weeks or in a month, I said, it'd be great if you come on.
Yeah.
You know, and he's like, yeah, dude, give me your card. And I'm like, okay, so we'll see what happens. But he was very nice and, you know, it was good.
You know,
good
what,
seeing
you know what's happening to him right now? People are asking him if he met anyone famous. And he's saying, I met Johnny Yoko Chips.
Yeah, oh, yeah, I'm sure he's saying. I'm sure that's the first name that's coming to mind.
Yeah.
No, but he was nice, and he retweeted because I showed it. I put it up on Twitter and stuff. He took a funny picture, you know, of him waving and smiling and stuff. So I popped that up on Twitter on Friday. He retweeted it, so we'll see. But I hope it comes through. And I was really excited because I made some good Bronze Age connections for future Word Balloon episodes. And I won't tip names because I want everyone to be surprised when they come on the show. Okay. But I went to Mark Evanier's 70s panel on Saturday morning. And got to talk to a bunch of creators that I haven't spoken to before. I found out Dan Juergens, by the way, is a Word Balloon listener, and that was very gratifying.
That's cool.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I was blown away. I've met him before, and we've talked at conventions before. But he's like, oh, I listen, John. I listen. I'm like, oh, my God. What are you – I'm like, you don't – why waste your time doing that? That's good. So that was really nice. But, yeah, it was great seeing Nicholas Scott, who I – you know, yeah, being on the other side of the planet. I saw her Thursday and Friday.
She got that sultry voice.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Oh, she's –
seems
breaks.
Like she should say darling after a thing.
Absolutely. My heart's in my throat every time I see her.
How you doing,
absolutely,
darling? Yeah.
Yes.
I'm like, oh, boy. My response is usually, that's what I say to her every time I see her.
So. I saw Jan Robinson and James. It was good to see them.
Yeah, they're good people. I ate pancakes with her.
You win. Yeah. That's good.
Yeah. So it was a good time.
Saw Amanda Connor, Darwin Cook. Darwin Cook drew in my Parker book for me, which is very nice.
We went to a party and Bill Willingham was there and Darwin Cook, and they're my wife's favorite writers for comics. And so I know she meets these people in the past, but then when she really gets into their books, I tell her, like, yeah, you met him before. She's like, no, I didn't. I said, okay. And so when we met at the party, those were the two people she gushed over. Like, she was total fangirl. It was awesome. I said, this is Bill Willingham. She went, oh, really? And so she's like all clammed up, you know, all scrunchy. And then when I saw Darwin, I saw him and the same thing happen. So it was cool. So we took a few pictures. It's a good time.
Excellent. Chris Robertson had that awesome party on Friday for his Monkey Brain digital initiative, and his lovely wife, Allison. They co-hosted this excellent party at the Hilton. I saw Francesco Francavilla there and his wife. It's Lisa, isn't it, Mike? I couldn't remember for sure, and that's why I was like, just good to see them. And Ian Brill, I saw him, a great boom guy. And it was, you know.
You know who I saw on Friday night?
Who?
Eisner Award-winning Mike Norton. I just kept hugging him. I love him. He's awesome.
I didn't see Mike till Saturday. I was thrilled that he came up and said hi.
He told me, you being so proud of me is going to make me cry.
I hate that impression of Mike.
Well, it's worse now because my throat is still fried. It's still hot.
I understand. J.K. Woodward, I saw him, it was good to see him. And I'm enjoying his Star Trek Doctor Who crossover to great degrees. So, no, I think all in all, a successful convention. How was it just doing it the 2 days, Mike?
Oh, it's perfect.
Yeah, much better.
Really?
I was still very tired. I didn't go out on Saturday night. I went home and sat in my gigantic jacuzzi tub.
Oh,
nice. Cool. What hotel were you at, Mike?
I was at the Holiday Inn Express.
Fantastic.
That's awesome.
But for some reason, when I got there, they said, this is the only room available. And it was this room with this gigantic tub in the center of it.
You win.
So
nice one.
I did that and ate some ice cream.
That sounds good.
What flavor? I want the full picture.
Ben and Jerry's Carmel Sutra.
Yeah,
I had a romantic night with myself.
It's good. It's something that
eating ice cream and watching Clash of the Titans
filled up the tub.
Wait, look at take me away. I like it, man. Oh God. So how's the buzz on Revival, boys?
Everybody seems to like it. I've seen lots of positive reviews, and it sold pretty well. And and Tim and I, Tim more than me, actually, we're kind of not knowing how to handle all the people actually liking our comic. I think Tim's more used to defending himself to people online that he's not used to people complimenting him.
I understand.
Yeah. I learned to stay offline. Don't click on the links and you'll be fine.
This is true. And Superman, how's Superman Family Adventures going there, Arthur?
Good. Got a good response. Lots of people digging it, and lots of kids. Kids were running up to me when I would walk, run up to me and, like, hug me. But they would always hug the leg because they're short and I'm tall and stuff. So a lot of spontaneous leg hugging by little small children. So it was kind of cool. Yeah. And they all call me Artie because they, like, hi, Artie. Thanks for this and that. And I got a lot of drawings handed to me, you know, from kids. But it's cool because especially with the Tiny Titans being in issue 2, I think that's what saved a lot of the people from being sad from Tiny Titans ending.
Understood. Yeah, yeah.
But it's a good response. I wish we had more than just 2 issues out right now because people wanted more and more. But it was good. Everything about everything right now is awesome. Yeah.
I like that.
We did a shout-out for DC Nation, too. So that was cool.
Oh, very good.
And it was
that's
weird
cool.
Because the thing has to be like 10 seconds. And so we had to keep redoing and redoing this thing and the segment. So I had to eliminate my last name because it was too long. Balthazar is just too long. And I had to eliminate Adventures off of Superman Family. And so we kept redoing it, and I kept messing up because we were given, like, I had to say one half, and then Franco said the other half. So I had to say, we're Art and Franco. We work on Superman Family, and then together we – and Franco said, you're watching DC Nation. So I kept saying – see how easy it was? I kept saying –
yeah, but you'd think that could fit in 10 seconds.
Yeah,
Come on.
I keep saying, I'm Art and Franco. I'm like, oh, no, I'm not. And then I'm like – and we're Art and Franco. We make – oh. So I kept doing – so I had to, like, find the right word. So I think it was we make Superman Family. I think that's what it was. Or we work on, or we do Superman, something like that. I couldn't figure out what word would be good. So there was about maybe 10 takes until I finally got it right. So it was pretty funny. So I hopefully will be on there. But I know we did it one last year, and I drew Crypto and Robin a bunch of different times. And the guy said that one was such a disaster because DC was changing their logo and everything. So there was too much in the video that had the old logo, something, but I don't know the details, but something to do, it was easier just to reshoot it this time. And it was so painful. Last year we did it one take. This time it wasn't painful. It was just like we kept laughing halfway through.
No business is hard, Artie.
Yeah.
This is all true. Very true.
It's all about timing. I didn't know it was only like a 10-second thing. It was cool.
You guys didn't get to go to any panels. I know Artie and Franco didn't because they were stuck at the booth most of the time.
I was on one on Saturday. It was called The Future of the Graphic Novel.
Yeah.
And
what'd you learn?
I don't know if I learned anything other than I think Brian Haberlin's like a mad scientist. He's got like this comic book that talks to you and changes when you take pictures of it and. Like Olivia Diabo, like, talks to you in it. She was on the panel, actually.
That's that big coffee table size.
Yeah,
science
gigantic.
Fiction.
It's a murder weapon. It's not a book.
It's all true. He had that at the retailer summit before C2E2,
yeah.
And wasn't able to actually do or felt like they weren't ready to do a full presentation at C2E2. They wanted to wait till San Diego. But I have seen that, and it's kind of like what Marvel's been doing, where you download an app and you put your iPhone or your iPad over these certain sections of the book. And as you say, images then come off the screen. They're very interactive.
Yeah.
It's really, really impressive. So, yeah, I'm glad that you saw that. And that reminds me, too, to book Brian Haberlin to talk about this book because it's very, very impressive. And it's ambitious because it's not a science fiction character that, you know, is a recognizable name. So you really are buying – I mean, it's beautiful art, and I think it's a very ambitious book and everything, but pretty interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Very cool. I like it. I went to a bunch of panels, as I always do, and mostly I dealt with comic history panels. I went to the Creepy panel, and Angelo Torres was there, one of the original Creepy artists. It was really cool seeing him. Steve Skates I saw on a panel, the old Aquaman writer from the 60s and 70s.
Yeah, I think he won like Hall of Fame or something at the Eisners or something.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. And I went to a panel about Bill Finger and Siegel and Schuster. Larry Tye, who wrote that recent Superman history book, was there. Again, this is another panel that Mark Evanier moderated. I really do stick with the history panels and stuff like that. I'm always interested in because those are the kind of panels that only happen at San Diego. You know, I mean, if I don't see a DC, Marvel, or any publisher panel, I'm not as worried because, you know, they do panel, you know, those things happen at every convention. But I really feel like San Diego in particular, you get those comic history panels that you don't normally see. So, and I wish I had gone to your graphic storytelling or graphic novel panel, because that's where I think a lot of the interesting conversation happens.
So. It was all right. I mean, I didn't say a lot, obviously, but Doug Knipple did.
Okay. All right. Yes. Well, any other final thoughts, gents? I don't want to keep you. I just wanted to get a kind of review of the con. I mean, it's certainly – I was impressed. I thought, again, anyone who gets annoyed at Hall H, it's still very easy to have a great convention experience without ever going to Hall H. I mean, I've been saying that for the last couple of years because I get angry when I come back. And I read from the people who didn't attend the convention how little comics matters at the con, and I'm sorry, if you go there, you can still have a great time and have a great comic book experience, and the Hall H people aren't going to bother you because they're off on their own section. It's not a big deal.
Yeah, I agree, but I wasn't in there a whole lot, so I'm not qualified to talk about it.
We didn't talk about Trickster. We should talk about Trickster, which obviously had to move.
Actually, I wasn't there a whole lot either, so I don't know if I can talk about that very much. I didn't see a whole lot of people when I was there. I think I was there in the off hours. And last year, I went to Trickster, and I sat there all day, and just watched people come in and out. And I wasn't there during the peak hours at night and stuff like that, so I didn't run into a whole lot of people at Trickster.
I got a... I was there, and it was very tight, very hot, real crowded.
Yeah.
And it was like a bar, and they had a little skinny hallway strip-like store for comics. So it was tough. Yeah. But it was tough to go through. Last year was a lot more open and free, and they had the patio and stuff like that. But I liked it. I bought like $70 worth of comics, so it was all right. But
that's good.
But I have to go and feed a bunch of people in my house right now. I got the call. My daughter's here looking at me.
All right, man. I'll let you go eat dinner. We can wrap up. And I did want to mention Trickster. So, no, I appreciate the wrap up, guys. It was good seeing you guys at the con. And I'm happy to see you at home as well. And I'm glad everybody was able to travel safe. And look forward to our next live encounter in Chicago. But
yes.
Thank you for your perspective on the San Diego convention this year, gentlemen. Thank you.
Yeah, Eisner Award winner.
I'm very important.
Okay, let's move on and listen to one of the panels at San Diego. It was the 2012 comic book panel. I was very pleased to be a panel member as opposed to moderating this year. Josh did the driving, Josh Flanagan from iFanboy, and I think he asked some very inspired questions, and we got into some discussions. I can't help it. I got to talk, and I'm sure I talk more than some of the other panelists, but, you know. I don't know. You guys come to Word Balloon to hear me talk. So as opposed to being a host asking questions, I get to answer questions and get more into discussion about what's going on in comic book podcasting and comics in general on this portion of Word Balloon.
Hey, everyone. I am Josh Flanagan from iFanboy.com. I'm going to moderate because we've all decided that John Centra speaks too much from the past.
What?
I have the impossible and unthinkable task of making this not boring. And you guys too a little bit, but I'll take responsibility. That's fine. Where are the iFanboy fans so that I will know where to direct jokes and feel good about myself? I'm going to need more of you. All right. I said who I was. So let's go down the line. Introduce yourself. Say your podcast. And tell us how long you've been doing this.
I am Bob Bretall. I'm co-host on the Comic Book Page podcast. We've been doing it for a little over 5 years. And we're coming up on... We've done over 500 episodes. John's back there. Over 600 episodes.
They have a stats man?
Yeah. Well, that's it. Every Monday. Haven't missed one for 253 episodes.
56.
Very good. I'm Brian Crispin from the Comic Geek Speak podcast. We've been going on for almost 7.5 years. I've been on it for about 6.5 years.
John Suntress from Word Balloon. I talk too much, and I've been talking too much since
May of 2005. So I just had my 7th anniversary, and I'm closing in on 500-ish.
My name is Pat Loika, and I'm the host of the Loika Mania podcast, and I've been going on for about 2 years now.
My name is Cameron Cammy Hathaway.
One guy.
Thanks.
Woo! One guy I want to
put. He loves the jacket.
Take him out. Not my only fan, please.
The pillow is missing from my house, Cammy.
I've been doing the show since October 2007, and I recently had a relaunch. So I numbers would be some comic books.
Yeah. You have a new number one.
Do what?
Do you have a new
reboot?
Number one?
Yeah. Point one, actually.
Wow.
It's Cammy.
That sounds like an awful idea.
Now, that's what it is.
If I make everything point one,
yes,
it'll be, everyone will love it.
Of course.
And in absentia, I'm guessing he's going to be bursting in as he always does.
I've heard he's running late.
Such a deep.
Gee, really. Jimmy Aquino from Comic News Insider.
He'll tell you people he knows in the comics.
I think since 2005 also, John,
I'm
right?
Down until he gets up. Yeah, I think he started in 05. I think so. He's one of the Mercury astronauts.
This is, we don't have a plan, so this is your thing. I guess let's start up. Let's see if we can get questions out of the way at the beginning. And if you have them, then bring them up, and then we'll address them. Otherwise, we'll make things up and talk about that, because that's what we do. Question, Captain America.
So I'm wondering, in the last couple of years, I think y'all have tried, a lot of you have tried various ways to monetize what you're doing, right? You got Fanboy Guys, you've done a couple of things. John, I know recently you started a campaign.
Yep.
Brian, they've always had sponsors. I mean, what has your guys' experience been, you know, from the kind of start of all this to how do we monetize it? What advice would you give for others who want to go that route? I'm not one of those. I'm just
Well, we have we got bought, which helped, which means that we do a lot of day job stuff with Graphically.com. So it was about, you know, trying to basically make what we do worth it to the bigger company and bring in advertising. And advertising, ad sales are hard. I don't want to do it
at
all.
But you were fundraising.
We did. I mean, basically, the greatest thing that we ever did was basically have like an NPR-style pledge drive where we just said, do you guys like this? If so, send us some cash on a regular basis, not a ton. And they're the ones who are still mostly supporting everything. And that's been very successful. But, you know, the precursor to that is going to be that you have to be big enough, you have to be popular enough, you have to be liked enough by your audience to have them want that to happen. So there's a whole lot of stuff that has to happen before you can ask for money, basically. I mean, you can ask for it, but you're not going to get enough to, you know, live on or anything like that. But, you know, that sort of NPR direct approach, I used to always listen to Ira Glass, you know, when they did pledge drives, and he would just say, you know, send us $5. If you like the show, help us do it directly. That was the thing that worked best for us. A lot better than advertising ever did. Advertising is really specious because we were never big enough to attract big audience advertisers, but we were never small enough to attract sort of the little stuff. Or it was just so much work to get $50 or something like that it wasn't worth the time. That's my experience. Someone else is moderating.
Well,
Cammy,
I was really I was inspired by Morgan Spurlock in a sense, because before just getting doing the ad sales through eBay, because I would just have auctions and say, hey, listen, I talk about your at the beginning of the episode and at the end of the episode. Let's just set it at like $10 and see what happens, because that's pretty much pays for hosting right there. But used to be just get sponsored by your local comic book store. I got a discount. While it wasn't a cash per se, there were giveaways that I got for free to give away to people by pull list, you know. The little things, but just with the eBay route, that seemed really.
Don't get into podcasting to make money.
No,
no. No.
I mean,
no.
Like, you know,
get in it because you really don't like money.
Yeah, and honestly, it was another podcast that inspired me to do what I'm currently doing, and that's Mark Maron's WTF podcast, because he even kind of rationalized it himself, as he usually does extemporaneously, and saying, hey, I do this much programming, you guys like it, help me out. And that's kind of been my approach, and I've been very pleased, and I appreciate everyone who has given tips. It's great, but as Josh says, no, you really shouldn't get into this to get into money-making right away, because I think podcasting, even though this is our 7th panel, sixth panel,
seventh
panel.
What the sign says.
I mean, it's still breaking. It's still happening. And even established people with a bigger brand name are still struggling. I heard Kevin Smith, as much as he is a proponent for podcasting, say, yeah, the money, you know, it's tough to get the money out there. So it's tough for all of us. And I really, as Josh said too, you need to have an audience. You need proof of concept. You need to be there every week to, you know, show that you're doing something that's worthy of sponsorship.
Which is, you know,
Jimmy Aquino.
5 minutes, as always. Jimmy Aquino, ladies and gentlemen.
Don't give him the attention.
Look at this. I like doing it. I have
he likes
to.
The entrance.
So, I like the walk-in.
Yeah.
So.
Is there another? It was a good question. That was excellent. You all have something to live up to, and no one has a question. This is going to be difficult. All right.
More than one hand last time.
So. Yeah, it's true. Somebody over here had a question.
They all have the same question.
Back here.
All right.
Yeah,
right
really
here.
Is that the
right
big
here.
Question?
White polo shirt.
Grant Morrison.
You're white polo shirt.
Grant Morrison. Good to see you, man.
Gmo,
hey.
What's up?
I listen to several of the podcasts, and I get them via iTunes. And I heard recently that iTunes was thinking about starting to charge money for podcasts. Is that true? I'm afraid that it's true.
That's first I
news to me. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Am I getting the money?
We don't pay attention to things. I mean, am I right? Did any of you? No, I've never heard of that.
It would kill us, probably.
I mean, yes. I think that would be ridiculous because the big example was the Ricky Gervais thing where he's like, everyone loves my show, I'll charge for it. No one's listening to my show.
That was an uncanny impression,
yeah.
Josh.
Yeah, I didn't try it. It's a difficult voice, and I didn't want too many. It's a thing. Yeah, you have a question?
Well, you said that one of the bigger things about making money in podcasting, if you choose to try to, is that you need to have the audience.
I could keep start talking, but somebody else want to start taking this?
Grassroots.
Shocking.
What I did when I started Wurbelin in 2005 was I went to the creators' websites and their message boards and said, you like Brian Bendis. I did an interview with Brian Bendis. Here's the link. And it really is that kind of, and it's certainly now in this social networking, you know, there was no Facebook back then, or there was no Twitter, but yet we managed. And then, no, honestly, these would email everyone. So... You know, it helps. It, I would suggest that.
I would say for us, we hit the convention circuit really early on. Yeah. We just got our names out there, set up at conventions, handed out CDs of our early episodes, and just invited the listeners to come see us and just met people walking by and saying, what's a podcast? And you get hooked that way. Worked for us.
I mean, my advice to anybody asking that question is always to get really good at it. And if you're really good at it and you work at marketing yourself, and it's harder now than it has been for any of us because there's just more noise, there's more stuff going on. And so the best thing you can do is always to get really good at the thing you're doing, and that's subjective, and do it really regularly and just interact with a bunch of people and hope that word gets passed around. I mean, I wish I had any advice. I don't have any other than we just like, hey, more people are listening this week.
Well, I think we were early. You hit on a good point, though, and it's just like, when it bugs comic fans when the comic you love doesn't come out every month and there's a 6-month gap, if you want to do a show and you want to build an audience, you need to be regular. You need to get the shows out on time. You can't do an episode and then at some random point 6 or 8 weeks later another episode comes out. You need to
unless you're Brian Hitch, and then it's cool.
Yeah, but you
it's
know,
a comic joke.
Do that regular cadence of episodes and you can find your audience. I think also just having the passion about what you're doing, you'll find the audience.
I think John hit the point of the head, hit on the head, though. It was like, it's grassroots. We all started on our own. We went out there, we emailed everyone. If I interviewed anybody, I'd email them, their fans or whatever like that, you know, put it out on different social media sites when they started happening. And again, also Brian also hit on it as well, going to conventions. We go to so many conventions and we meet people, you know, we may pick up one listener, may pick up 1,000. You never know at that convention. You never know. They may see, like, oh, you interviewed somebody I like, or you're covering something I like.
You know? Another tip now would just be that I get a lot of emails from people who are saying, oh, we do a geek pop culture comic podcast, and that there's a lot of those. So if I had any other advice, it would be to specify what you do. If you can find a niche that you know a lot about and are very good at, and do that thing as opposed to being very general. I want to talk about all the things I like. That's really hard to make an impact because there are thousands of other people doing the same thing. Doesn't mean you can't do it, but it's just something to think about in this crowded marketplace.
Yeah, Peter, your old co-host, Peter Rios, said don't use the word comic or geek in your title either, because it's like, oh, God. It's in so many of them already. So,
yeah, I noticed on iTunes when you search for comic books, outside of iFanboy, the other things that come up are stand-ups that have done books. Yeah. And I'm like, and then you get into the specific podcast list, and then we all show up. But I was like, I mean, nobody knows the metrics of iTunes, and we've all like banged our head against the wall going, I don't understand. I know I've got more downloads than that. Why am I not in the top 10?
So. He always talks to himself in that voice.
I do. Well, they know that if they listen. So,
well, yeah, I get so much PR from
the Edwin Mirror.
I get so much PR from people because our show is Comic News Insider that I think, like, it's comedy. Let's send them PR about, you know,
well, the stand-up comics came in out of nowhere. We're all here first.
Exactly, yeah.
Do we have more questions? Right over here.
Sure. If you actually bring a comedian on the beginning of every episode, you think that would actually generate?
I've done it.
No. Guests have never done anything for our show. Like, no matter, like, no, in terms of, like, downloads, we never got more because of who was on it or who wasn't, like, with the video show or something like that.
Really?
Our other show, yeah, totally.
My show spikes all, I mean, it does.
Your show is an interview show, so it's specific to it, but we built our show specifically so they didn't, this is not your question, so that we didn't have to deal with that. Like, I didn't want to be like, I can't get somebody this week, because at the time, there was Fanboy Radio, who may be around, I don't know.
It is.
I know, I'm awful. And I was like, God, then their guests suck. I don't want to listen. So we were like, I don't want to have to book things. That's awful.
Man, John says certain guests will certainly spike up, you know, and like we've expanded into a lot of TV and film as well. So we get anytime, obviously, everybody's a, you know, a star effer. So we all love it. Celebrities. So anytime there's certain celebrities on, people are like, all of a sudden the downloads like are so big, and then those people probably never come back because they're just interested in maybe that TV show or that movie. And on occasion, you know, maybe one of them like, oh, I like what they get these guys do or whatever. So, you know,
I want to get Marin on.
And
then I waited too long and it got too big. Yeah. And I was like, oh, he's not going to answer my. Because he would have before. I would have just told him at the beginning that, like oh, I kind of liked your stuff earlier, but I don't now. And then he definitely would have responded.
Yeah.
That's a podcast joke.
He's sitting right back there.
Yes, miss.
Another question?
He's driving.
He's not here. He knows we're talking about him now.
Yeah.
Yeah, another one, please.
I was wondering, since you're talking about guests, how do you guys usually get your guests? Is it just the luck of
blackmail?
A lot of people?
It's really not that hard. I'm serious. It's like, I'm not being, it's, I've gotten, so, I mean, comic book guests are easier because they're very approachable at shows, most of them. Unless it's a show like this.
They're just like us.
But honestly, like, when it comes to, like, TV and film, I mean, it's publicists you go through, but a few I've gotten through Twitter where I was like, hey, I liked your whatever, and they write back, oh, really, you want to have me on your show? Yeah, okay. It's sometimes as simple as that. Other times you have to go through a whole rigmarole, publicists and managers, things like that, but, comic book people, they're a little more approachable. So,
although with the success of some of the publishers, it seems it's gotten a little harder.
Yeah.
With some of the big, you know, some of the bigger publishers, mm-hmm. And it's not harder, but there are more restrictions because when we did start like in 2005 and 6, much like getting the word out about your show, it was easy to go to a creator's website, and I would still suggest that, especially with a lot of image creators, independent creators, and that. Some of the smaller publishers. So yeah, I think Jimmy's right. They are very approachable.
Or go out drinking with them like I do.
I'm actually terrified to ask
your pals.
Things like that. So I make friends with them first.
Yeah,
I don't know why that's easier for me. Like, now that we know each other, you want to
Well, that's the thing about drinking. I'm like, go out drinking. Oh, wait, remember that we had that really fun night drinking, and then I won't talk about what happened to hookers.
It's a lot easier.
And they're totally cool. So I come on the show.
It's a lot easier with indie people. You know, you can approach them on Twitter or Facebook or go to their website. They've usually got
their
email address or they've got some kind of contact form. DC, since the New 52, they have to get clearance from their marketing department before they talk to anybody.
And they have to listen in. Yeah, I like this better.
Yeah.
Hey, Pat Loika, you need to talk. No, you interview everybody in the industry.
Seriously.
So that's what your show, like every day you're going to, I'm like, oh, I'm so lazy. Pat has so many guests. What's the thing that works best for you in terms of getting guests?
Well, for me, really, it's just I maintain a pretty good presence online, and people know me because of my presence online. And basically, I just approach them on Twitter, or I just send an email from out of the blue, and most of the time they say yes. I think I've only been refused once or twice.
Name names.
Huh? Yeah.
Who was it? Name names.
Yeah, but Pat, like, even inadvertently, because of your good-naturedness, I mean, you networked for, like, several years before actually doing the podcast. So much like Josh was saying, you did become friends with everybody before you started doing the show.
You haven't been doing it that long, but I've known your name forever, and I don't know why.
Well, I know. Because...
Also, you have. You're always awake. You're on Twitter 24 hours a day. How does that work? And how many statues do you have to take pictures of?
No.
Do you have a room?
I'm running out of room, actually.
Okay. That makes me feel better. My little guy has to go home. He has a shipment coming in. A jet landed in his room. And they have books for him.
I'm saving this industry for you guys.
Let's stick on interviews because this is something. Is everybody here? You all do them for the most part?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't listen. I don't listen to my own shows.
No, we don't listen.
Wait, what show is yours again? I'm sorry.
Hmm?
What is your show again?
Geekscape.
That's my favorite.
What kind of prep do you guys do for interview shows? You know, you're gonna have somebody on. Are you exhaustive? Are you like, I gotta read all these books, or do you just read the Wikipedia page, or you just sort of Wikipedia, or do you just go in? I bet you're preparing.
Well, I typically only interview people that I'm genuinely interested in their work. So it's either someone that I've already been following, or I saw a solicit in the previews or something that looked really cool. So I'll go to their website. I'll look at, you know, what's this book about, and I'll try to find out some amount of information about it so that I can at least know something about it.
And I'm lucky because I've got three or four other guys on the show to back me up when my mind just freezes up. So we all come at from different angles.
If you like working in a group interview environment, because I just can't stand it.
Well, it's difficult. We get someone on the phone and we just start talking and people just jump in. There's no really like, oh, you do this, you do that, you do that. It's just whoever has something to say just chimes in.
Because there's a bunch of you. Do you have an organization ahead of time? You're like, we're going to ask these questions, or is it just a free for all until we're like, hang up?
Usually, if it's a first time guest, first question is always, how'd you get into comics? And we just go from there.
Maybe that's the old standby.
Yeah.
I say, what's your origin?
Ooh. But, you know, I say, are you wearing pants? Because I'm not.
We'll get into, you know, their background in comics and whatever they're doing, and work our way towards the present. You know, sometimes organically, sometimes we jump around. It's just hit or miss. Depends on how talkative the person is as well. If they're running at the mouth, it's great. Just sit back and let them go.
Yeah. I like to be pretty researched when it comes to especially comic book folks because I want to know their work. I want to talk about them. TV and film, like I'm a former actor, so I think I'm pretty fast on my feet. I can improv with people and hang out and just have a conversation. And that's what I like to do is just have a conversation with them and just hang out. Oh, people happen to be listening. You know, but when it comes to like comic books, things, I want to be read up. I want to read as much as I can about as much of their work about it. I postpone interviews because I'm like, no, I need to finish reading like, you know, this volume of whatever. And just because it just makes it's more natural. It's more comfortable. They know, you know, what they're talking about, you know, so it's they don't question you like, you didn't know that I did that. You're like, oh, no, sorry. It's embarrassing. So,
now, John, I've seen you get called out for this on shows. So are you winging it for the moment? You've been talking to people, and you say something, they go, no, I don't do that at all. And you get out of it good. You got the radio chops. But, like, how much prep are you doing?
Well, because of, as a former male model, I much like him.
He was a gorgeous man. He is a gorgeous. I'm sorry.
Well, no, I honestly spent, and I say this a lot in these forums, I spent 10 years in radio, and really the first few years doing interviews the wrong way, where it really was like the Chris Farley show. Remember when you did that thing, and that was awesome? And since then, what I do is... I learned that it's good to have a list of subjects that you want to have, and you don't have to write them down, but I find, especially early on, I found that it helps to have them to fall back on, but really to rely on the fact that you guys are having a conversation, and Jimmy, I know, does that when he does his interviews as well, and it's more interesting. So I start with that list, but really I just let the conversation kind of organically happen. If we find a lull, I've got a list to fall back on. But leave yourself open and always listen, because it sounds stupid to say, make sure you're listening to the other person. But while you're checking the list of what you want to ask the person next and be precise, you might miss something like, and I killed 7 people. And all of a sudden you want to go, well, wait a minute, let's talk about that for a second. What was it like to kill 7 people?
Wait a minute, listen to other people.
Dude, you would not believe, and honestly, I think you can hear it on some of the poor interview podcasts that do kind of sound like it's a college radio show, and it's a very nervous person, and it's really great to talk to you, and okay. But you want to follow up, and really don't be afraid of letting the conversation happen. That's the best advice that I ever got, and that's what I tell
you. Do you wing it a lot now? I mean, just because you've been doing it. The thing that you do is you talk to everybody. Yeah. And I tend to only talk to people I want to talk to. You said the same thing, but you talk to
the people I want to talk to, just like you and Jimmy.
Yeah, but you, I mean, you talk to a lot, so you can't know all of them. You can't know everything about all of them. So
no, but I like them, and but my nerd power and weakness is if I like something, I attack it voraciously. I read everything. I want to know about it. And I want to know
likes
more.
You, he's going to attack you voraciously.
And it's true. No, but like a guy like Neil Adams, it's been wonderful. And literally, this is a guy that I've read since I was like first reading comics. And I have a million questions and would love to go back and talk about this.
And the problem with that guy is you can't get him to say anything.
Yeah, it's too bad.
And he's got self-esteem issues.
Hey, man, and I'm just saying this word in general because if Neil's listening, I love you. Wing nuts are awesome. And I don't mean that from the conservative standpoint. Any kind of person that comes from left field, get on. Yes, I want to talk to you about your crazy insights. I mean, honestly, you know, and really, Neil Adams, Billy Tucci, these are outspoken people that have very pointed opinions. Great. Sit down. Tell us about them. That's good radio, and that's good podcast.
Mr. Loika, what's your approach?
Well, I usually make sure that before I invite anyone on, I'm caught up on everything that they've done. And I also, you know, I have to really like them and their work for me to invite them on because, you know, I wouldn't do it. And sometimes, you know, I like to pick guests depending on, like, you know, say it's a colorist or someone like that. Like, you know, they don't really get enough attention. And someone that I kind of want people to, you know, look into, you know. I've had guys like Dean White on. I had Jordy Malera on recently. And, you know, it'd be fun to see their point of view behind the creative process. So I want to try and get into the process talk at the same time. You know, I kind of like what John said. He kind of does the opposite of what I do, where I have no problem like praising these people when they're on the show because, you know what, they don't really get that off. So they should be celebrated on the show. So that's really more my approach. And every now and then I would do like roundtable stuff and, you know, kind of mix it up a little bit because, you know, the interviews are fun, but there are a lot of people who do interviews. Like, you know, John and Jimmy, they do great interview shows already. So I want to kind of mix up a bit, have interviews, and then have just conversations with friends and, you know, focus on subjects. That's it.
Do you have anything to add, Cammy?
I mean, seriously, everyone's pretty much said the same points. Just read what they've been doing. I always check sometimes Comic Book DB because it's fascinating to find out, oh, they were on that. Or, oh, I didn't know that they were on that back issue of, like, G.I. Joe, you know, 117 or whatever. But write out 2-3 pages of notes at least. You don't have to go through all of them, but it's always nice to have just kind of a lifeline just in case the conversation goes stale. But yeah, just listening is pretty much the big key because I've gone on so many sidetracks with interviews just because I found something outside of comics, outside of their subject, just fascinating. Oh, I didn't know you were a sports fan, or oh, I didn't know you rooted for that team, or whatever. And so it's really, if you're having fun interviewing the person, then you can think maybe the audience might be having fun listening to you interview the person.
Everybody just coming in now. I don't know what the panel is next, but you're stuck with us. We're not letting them in. So, sorry. So, enjoy us. I don't know what's next, but you're going to hang out with us.
You guys are being bored to tears. Yeah. You have a question,
Captain.
So, you don't do interviews. You're talking about interview people you like. But a lot of you guys are fairly big. You must get publicists who are bringing guests.
Sure, yeah.
Or publishers.
Yeah.
Have there been people brought to you that
you'd
like to interview someone, so
it's
really
every day.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot.
Oh, I mean, it goes back to the non, I'm not ready for because I haven't read their stuff or I haven't seen that TV show or that film. I'm like, oh, you know what, maybe in the future after I've caught up on that.
We all got in here free. I'm not bragging. But in exchange for that, our email inboxes are a war zone of detritus.
Oh my God. Yeah.
That we have to deal with for the next 6 months. Yeah. And then it's awful.
Never. That's why I was late. I was doing it.
I get resentful when somebody comes to us with like, "You want to be? Can I be on your show?" I'm like, "Have you looked what I? Who are you? Come on!" But I'm a snob.
It's a delete key.
Look at our guest list. Come on. Yeah, I mean, like, there's no shortage of guests, but for us, it's really important. We always look at our Venn diagram of what we have on our site and our shows as stuff we're really interested in and stuff that our audience is really interested in. And if somebody doesn't fit in there, we tend to not program. And other shows will, you know, throw lots of stuff and try lots of things. We never tend to do that, but you may be different.
We also have a shark week. So
you learn to lie. That's the best week.
Yeah.
Or sometimes you get a guy who literally is on his first book, and it looks like his first book, and I give him credit for coming up and asking, but it's like, hey, man, you're not ready for prime time. And I don't mean that we're cool. I'm like, you're still kind of developing your thing. Why don't you work more?
But what he does is he writes back, and Ingrid just writes, you know who I am?
No, honestly.
Yeah, I don't mind that because, like, it's like, a show like this is silly, ridiculous, because it's all TV and film stuff, and we cover that. But when I go to a show like Heroes Con or TCAF, which are really comic book shows, I will just walk around the floor, and I'll have stuff set up with, like, oh, sure, the Marvel DC guys, Image guys, Dark, whatever. But I'll walk around the floor, and as I know all these guys do as well, and just meet people. Sure. Go to the tables, never heard of them. They got a small little webcomic that has 10 viewers. They've got to self-publish a staple their comic. And I'll interview them because, you know, and I haven't read it yet, but I want to give them, like, you know, sometimes it's their very first interview. So it's fun for them and to get their name out there and have people listen and check them out, you know. Maybe I read it later and go, God, that really sucked, but I shouldn't have had them on here.
Yeah, that's horrifying.
Yeah, but at least, you know, hey, you know, they got their name out there. Maybe they can learn from it. Like, oh, I need to work on more stuff.
Thank God you're doing the work because,
you know, well, someone has to.
There's just too much to go through. Like,
someone has to wear a tie.
There's a horrible thing about comics is that there are 8 bajillion people making indie comics, and 90% of them are not very good yet.
Well, and much like podcasting,
yeah,
it's the truth. Honestly, no, the best and worst thing currently about podcasting and comics is anyone can do it, and that's great. But there's the other side of that equation, and it's the truth.
And anyone can do it. And I don't mean to say that they're not very good because everything sucks. It's not bad. It's that usually for those people, it's their first thing they ever did. And when you do something for the first time, you're not good at it. Let me ask you guys something. This is something that you brought up to me. Is when you're talking to somebody, some of you guys will do it through Skype, and some of you guys will do it one-on-one. And I remember hearing Terry Gross talk about this once, is that she had to interview somebody face-to-face, and she hates it because she normally does it in a booth. So do you prefer one or the other? Do you like doing it, you know, over Skype? Or John's pro. He doesn't care.
No, I'm sorry. But, yeah, I have been doing radio interviews for 20 years, and either way is fine.
I prefer in person, yeah.
Well, for me, it's just in a con, there's lots of background noise. There's lots of distractions. And whenever we do it, unless you want to put a lot of time, this is on the technical side, unless you want to put a lot of time into post-production, they sound lousy a lot of times if you're not like wanting to spend a lot of time trying to filter out all that noise. So I would rather have a conversation with someone I meet at the show, get to know them, look at their work, and then set up a time that we can talk, and then I'll call them on the phone or over Skype and record an interview at some other time with them.
Yeah, it's just necessary for us to have them on the phone. I love doing the one-on-ones, but not everybody goes to the cons, not everybody can come to our studio. We've got one of our guys on our show, Adam, just doesn't really like interviews at all. He says, like, it's a disembodied head.
Like
he just
people.
Sees there. He wants to actually make eye contact, talk with him, but that's how we have to do it, is getting him on the phone, basically.
I like it in person because it is more personal, and you get to kind of hang out and chat. But they feel more comfortable sometimes. They like, you know, especially you're very relaxing and conversational. And then often, like, I actually do kind of like doing stuff on the con floor because there is that excitement of hearing what's going on outside. You're in the middle of the game.
Yeah, I gotta say, right here. Our mic does not have a problem with that.
Yeah.
So that might just be an equipment.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, my mic, it'll pick up whatever's closest. And now I even started doing these ones a few years ago where, like, sort of dinner, like, you guys remember that old Jon Favreau show, Dinner for Five? I started doing that with cartoonists at different shows where we'll go out to dinner and we'll literally just, you can hear us ordering, you can hear us eating, and we'll talk about comics or whatever. And it's very charming. People feel like they're there sitting with us, and so I mean, I try different things here.
You're so charming.
I am pretty.
That's fantastic.
Well dressed.
Let my chance is huge. I can't afford to fix my house. Anyway, I have a house. That's something. Last year we talked about this a little bit, and this is the thing that's been bugging me all year. Are you guys journalists?
Nope.
No.
Oh God, I love each and every one of you
now.
I'm a reporter in a sense.
Really?
Report things.
Well, wait a minute. What's the difference between a reporter and a journalist?
Here we go.
Because I report things. It's just the word.
Okay. No, I. Sometimes,
sunny out.
Sometimes I'm a journalist. I'll cop to that to a degree. But I think it's an entertainment. I think it's an
entertainment
show. But I do think here's something. And again, forgive me, but this is something that drives me nuts on interviews and critiques as well. If you are going to do an interview or critique something, I think it's important to have your facts right.
Have some journalistic ethics.
Sure, yeah. Or structure. Right. If you're going to review before Watchmen, I think it's a good idea to have read Watchmen recently to compare the two. That's just me.
Guilty.
Or at least know Watchmen well enough to.
Well, that
to
brings
say.
Something up. Something I've noticed lately. Here's a pet peeve of mine as a podcaster and person who runs a comic book website. The pros of comics will complain about reviewers and they will complain about podcasters incessantly.
Yes.
At the same time, we are their giant free marketing.
Yeah, exactly.
machine, and it drives me insane.
But isn't it? But I think it's fair when they say things like. When you hear a podcaster complain in a critique that I thought the art was lazy, I think that is incredibly audacious for someone to say that. If you're not sitting next to that creator 24 hours a day, how do you know? What do you know? What was his deadline? Maybe the script was late. Maybe he was sick. Maybe he had to worry about something else. I mean, or another thing, a lot of artists will reproduce backgrounds in the back of panels to save time because, again, it's a deadline medium. Well, that's lazy. Wow. Wow.
Yeah, I think it's pretty...
I hear that a lot on a lot of podcasts, and I always find that incredible. But that's just me.
I agree with you.
Obviously, I don't have an opinion.
No one else has anything to say on that.
No, it's fine. No, I totally agree with him. I think it's just, we try not to just completely destroy things because, A, who am I? I can barely wake up, so I can't write or draw. So it's like, somebody puts their heart and soul into it. Like,
kind of a cop out?
Yeah, no, I don't think so.
Not everybody who has to write about something has to be able to, people can be a good film critic without making a film.
Of course.
And this is the thing that artists and creators will look, they don't know what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. Well, at a certain point, if you've been doing this long enough, you've been paying attention.
Sure.
You should understand the language of comic books, and you can speak with authority on it. And, I mean,
you better be right, though, because if not, you're a lousy critic.
Yes.
Or a lousy commentator, because it happens in every creative endeavor. You hear that in movies and TV as well. You don't make movies. What do you know about filming? I heard it when I covered boxing. You never boxed. What the hell do you know? And I mean, and it's fair. That's fair to a degree, but that's where the critic or commentator has to know their stuff and be able to prove it with their pilot.
I don't think you should ever say, oh, this is complete this is horrible.
Occasionally. Did you read that Sentry story?
Sorry, I'm so sorry. Can we put that out in post? Thanks.
Well, have you guys had that come back to you? Where you said something bad? What's the worst example of having you say something critical about something and having it come back to you? You can either be specific with names or not, but names are better.
I way back when Phonogram the Singles Club first came out, the first issue, this was on iFanboy's message board, back when you guys had a message board. Revision 3, was it? Yeah. And I never read Phonogram before, but since I read everything every week, I was like, okay, well, I got this, gotta read it. And I just said, I didn't get it. I just don't get it. It doesn't make sense, so that's why I'm giving it a low rating.
Josh is friends with them, be careful.
No. And then Kieran Gillen, who also...
Kieran reads everything up to this day that anybody says about it.
He called me out on it, and for the longest time, he explained, it's in the back of the issue, so, sorry if you don't get it, but it's all right there. I felt like a complete... for years. But then I finally came out of my hidey hole and I read Phonogram, both volumes 1 and 2, and I just fell in love with it. And I apologize to him.
It's real marketing work by the creators of that book. We gotta find that one guy who didn't like it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Make him like it.
But since my podcast mainly focuses on the good, I'm telling you what I enjoy every week, this is why I like it. That's why I kind of stay away from the bad reviews. Well, not the bad reviews,
just bad critiques.
Mm-hmm. Because I don't want that to come back. I want to be friends with people. I don't want people to go didn't like that second issue, so piss off.
But, I'm not afraid to say I didn't like it. I'm not going to be like, this is the worst thing. Whenever people say that, this is the worst thing I've ever seen, I'm like, wow, you must have seen a lot in life if this is the worst thing ever.
Yeah.
I just think it wasn't for me. I felt like maybe I will never say the artist lazy. I felt like the pacing maybe was slow or the dialogue here was whatever. There's certain things, I'll find about it that just wasn't for me and I didn't like, but there may be someone out there that absolutely loves it, so.
They're wrong, though.
But what we try to do is concentrate on relatively objective things, and if it's subjective, it's our opinion. It's like, if I didn't like something, I can say I didn't like it, but, if I say... the panel-to-panel continuity was hard to follow in this. That's an opinion, mm-hmm. but it's not saying this was terrible. It's the worst thing I've ever seen. But it's pointing out a specific thing about that issue. Or in many cases, one of my hot buttons is if the colorist comes on too strong, it just muddies up the art with very dark coloring. What do I know? I'm not a colorist, but still, I've read thousands upon thousands of comics, and I can tell if I look at something and it's really difficult to interpret what's going on, I will say that.
That's fair, though, but I also, but again, back to it's the end result might be muddy. And even the right. best artists are like, yeah, you know something, late deadline, I know, it's not great. The donuts have to come out on time, especially right. from the big two, now more than ever. And maybe actually one of the big two, and yeah. that's one of their imperatives, yeah. is, no, we're going to hit that deadline. So that's where those things happen. And yeah, that's fair to say, I didn't understand the storytelling. But to then say, that's lazy, which I'm not saying you're saying that, but I'm just saying it's taking
right.
you to that
sure.
degree.
Ron has
that's
said
where
that.
It's wrong.
But it gets to the
wrong.
Point of, you know, when you're critiquing it, you know, it's I'm a reader, I'm reading a comic, and I'm trying to give someone advice on, you know, do you maybe want to check out this comic? If you liked this thing here, you might like this other thing over here. Give some comparatives and just try to guide people, because, boy, there are so many hundreds and thousands of comic books that come out there. I read like 120 comics a month, okay? My co-host John over here reads 190 comic books a month, and that is scratching the surface of sure. the total number of comic books that are out there. You know,
do you enjoy that many comic books a month? After all this time,
I have cut back in the last year from about 185 to 120, and I enjoy most all of those. I think what
how long are you reading something after you're not enjoying it? Do you keep going with it?
It depends on how long I've been reading it.
Because I would cut you off in the middle of this sentence right now.
Thank you so much. No, I stick with something for a couple, two, three issues maybe, but then I'll drop it. I've dropped a lot of books.
Well, let me ask everybody, how do you see comic books different now than when you started? You've been at this a long time. You've had to develop a language to be able to talk about them. You have to understand them better than you did before, and presumably you do. He doesn't. He understands them the same. No, how do you look at comics different? Do you appreciate them differently? Do you like them as much? Do you have higher standards? Where you at?
Where you at, yo?
No, honestly, I see, because we talk to these people, you see the behind-the-scenes stuff, so you see the complete picture. When reboots happen, they don't bother me. And it's certainly as an older reader, because I kind of get that the especially the main two, are trying to reintroduce the characters to a new audience. And if you really step back, reboots have been happening since literally the late 40s. Siegel and Shuster rebooted Superman in 1948 with a retelling of the origin. I mean, literally, that's how long it's been going on. So to get angry about Marvel Now or the New 52, I can appreciate that from an individual standpoint. If you're doing a podcast, then you're not paying attention enough, and I think you need to know how this works. And I think
you should understand the forces around it,
right? And understand that as you get older, it's cool to still enjoy them, like Bob and I do. Mm-hmm. But because I'm thinking we're the oldest ones on the panel, but but really, if you're mad, then the book's no longer. You see the trick. You've seen the trick done enough times. Maybe it's time to try a different comic or stop for a while. I mean,
but that's good and bad, because there's so many comics, like Bob was saying, so many comics out there. That's great. The same, it's like, oh my God, there's so much to choose from, and you see so much that interests you. And going back to what Josh was saying about, like, you know, how much do you follow up? Like, I drop so much after an issue two or three because I just can't keep up, because something new comes out I want to cover, yeah. and then I'll forget that I really like this one because I dropped it after two or three, so I'll have to go back and get the trade and catch up that way. But there's just, it's so flooded, the market. And when you do these, and again, I don't mind the reboots either, but Marvel Now and New 52, but you feel like, I want to get every one, you know, and it's like. Well,
but there's so many books out there that if you want to read 5 comic books a month, there are enough comic books out there. If you look around, listen to some shows, go to some web, you can find 5 books that you think are totally awesome comics, the best things you've ever read.
And I feel like more people need to focus on those 5. Than the bunch. Anybody, like, do you have a different sort of understanding, appreciation of comics now? You've been doing this a long time.
Well, yeah, I talk to a lot of creators, so I know more about the process in terms of just reading books and enjoying them for what they were. I sort of see where they're coming from, see some of what their personal lives put in a comic, so I respect that a little more than in the past. I'm probably a little harder on some people because I know them than in the past. But yeah, it's just different being behind the scenes a little bit, seeing how the sausage is made, basically.
Yeah. Pat, you've made comics too, in addition to all that, so.
Yes.
Well, yeah, part of the thing is you know exactly what these guys are going through, and then when you talk to them and they tell you everything, you know, I've had people kind of spill their guts about, you know, why certain things happen in a certain issue and how it relates to their personal lives. So every time I pick up a comic and I read them, I just appreciate the fact that this person, you know, especially the really good ones, they really pour their hearts and souls out on their books. And, you know, I try to be very respectful. I try to avoid, you know, like on my show, I never ever, I don't talk about anything I don't like, because someone out there likes that book, even though it doesn't work for me.
What's something you don't like right now? Which it's only us.
It. I'm not gonna name it.
I'll give you $1,000 if you name it right now. I'll make a ring.
Nah, I'm not gonna. All right. There's a lot of stuff there I don't like, but I don't talk about it. Simple as that.
Damn.
No comment. Damn it.
And you didn't used to like Phonogram, but now you do. So why is that? Are you smarter now?
I went to school. No. Well, when I first...
I still don't get it. So I get it.
Before the comic podcast went up, it was just mainly I knew a couple of creator names, and then like, okay, I'm buying this book because I like the superhero. But when you want to talk about a book, you really start to have to take notice of the entire creative team. And so if anything, I've really respected comics more because all the names that are attached, all the hard work that's put into it, like... Ask me 5 years ago, like, oh, who's that inker? And I'd be like, what's an inker? Like, I wouldn't understand that Tracer. That was a separate job in some instances. But I just the whole...
They won't be around team. Long. Inkers are
no,
all along for the world.
Unfortunately,
so,
they're an endangered species. But, yeah, just more respect, if anything. And I really see it as an art form. Like, don't you bulls see this? The amount of work that went into it?
I do that
like
all the time.
Minor comic to me.
Yeah. I mean, if there's anything that is, it's gotten to me after sort of podcasting for a long time and sort of being involved in the creative process. And most of when I do podcasts on my own, when I do interviews, I tend to focus on craft. I talk to people about making comics because that's the thing that's interesting to me because I don't care what's going to happen in Avengers. And it's just that's where those people are working because they're the best ones. And I get angry that not everybody out there thinks that Ramon Perez isn't the greatest thing to come along in a billion years because he's a master cartoonist. And none of these heathens know about it.
It'll happen. You know it'll happen. He'll get something,
yeah.
The right mainstream job, and someone will go, wow, where did you come from?
Yeah.
It's happened with writers and artists. Yeah, I mean, yeah. It always happens.
Yeah.
So.
We were running a little short on time, but I haven't gotten the last notification about that. So what's the best thing that's come out of doing podcasting for so long? You guys have been neck deep in this stuff for a really long time. If you had to boil down, like, what the greatest... benefit of this whole experience of this thing has been, what is it about this whole world that is makes it worth of you to keep doing, you know, or is it a single experience, is it an overall thing?
Was that night you I had at the bar? Oh, sorry.
For me, it's when people who listen to our show come up to me and say that they discovered some comic that they love because they heard us talking about it.
Yeah, it's a listener's feedback to me when I go to so many cons and they say, oh, I enjoy your show. It means so much to me. That's crazy to hear that stuff from me. I can't get over it. It still happens to this day, and I'm never going to get used to that. It's fantastic.
I'll never get that. For me, it's meeting so many people and work, like becoming friends. We all become friends with people in the business. And for me, it also opening up the world outside of the big two. I love, love, love indie comics and self-publishing. And I certainly talk about it a lot on the show, and I cover a lot of DC Marvel, obviously, but I mean, independent small books or graphic novels. This is something I love that some of you are like, oh, comics are for kids, but I guarantee you can find a comic for anyone, be it Archie, be it maybe even something serious like Alison Bechdel's new one, My Mother, incredible, you know, for a literary person like that doesn't like comics would probably really like that because it is an amazing, amazing book. But there's something out there for everybody. So that's what I really liked about it.
For me, it's been beyond the audience appreciation, which is amazing. Following this business, because much like when I worked in sports, I find it season to season, it's always interesting to see what's going to happen next. Beyond the stories, the industry is at such a very interesting point and has changed so much even in the 7 years that we've been doing this. And I am really fascinated, much like with music, where comics are going in this new digital age. And it's great to talk to these people that are doing it as it's happening. I mean, it's almost like you're a correspondent. You are covering this much like somebody either covering sports or news. What is going to happen next? So I get the opportunity to find out firsthand, and I find it fascinating.
For me, the biggest benefit really is, I'm going to be honest, it's just kind of sound like it's going to be kind of selfish, but the fact that, you know, a lot of these creators have listened to the show and have messaged me or contacted me through Twitter, and some of them even asked me, hey, can I be on your show? You know, just that sort of thing, because that says, hey, I'm doing something right, because these guys are, these are the people I respect, the people I admire and whose work I follow,
awesome.
And now they're following what I'm doing, so.
They asked me to stop.
It really is the fans, and not just the fans that like come up to you at the con and go, "Hey, I enjoyed the show," or the creators that say, "Hey, you know, hey, thanks for giving me that great review or whatever." First of all, the creators recognizing me, like, that just always blows my mind. Like, you know who I am? Like, just meeting the heroes who entertain me month after month after month is just like, that's the biggest joy. But the international fans, getting an email from frickin' Switzerland, getting
I
an
like
email
your
from
show
Japan.
Very much.
Yeah,
you come to house my mother make food.
Sometimes it is
the weirdest Swiss accent I've ever
heard. It's still just mind blowing that I've reached someone across the oceans. Yeah,
I'd say
the big blue wet thing. All right.
Can we get a question from all the people that came in that aren't here for our panel? Maybe they're curious.
Yeah.
They're here for the next one. Anyone from
t-shirts.
The next panel?
What
curious
what
about what
we're
doing here?
We're going to take our best shot at answering it. Doctor Who.
Is it Doctor Who?
Do you have a question? Do you have a real question or is it a fake question?
It's a real question.
All right.
Excellent. What is the next panel?
Simon & Schuster.
Oh, real publishing. Sorry.
More
I have lawyers. It's fine.
No, you're right, though, man. It's a YouTube world. I mean, that's the thing. And Peter Parker's right. With great power comes great responsibility. And I was saying that when we
did
the podcast companion book, you know, a few years ago. It's the truth. Be careful with what you say. That's the thing, man. Like I said, anybody can do it.
I think the thing that you'll see with a lot of us, because we've been around a lot, we've talked to all sorts of people. I always, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking the people who made this thing are listening. And sometimes that really means a lot to them, and sometimes it doesn't. And I know that I've created things, you know, from comics or stories or whatever, to the podcast itself. And when somebody says, you know, when I see some comment on the internet, like, "I hate your show, it's stupid." Like, there are people who don't like me because I don't like the same comic book they do, which is strange. Like, well, some of you won't like me because I'm here. But... like that
Josh.
Has a real impact, and I tend to think about it. So whenever I try to talk about anything negatively, and we don't try. I mean, I think we're all been around. Like, there's nobody's on here like, "Oh, this is garbage." Next, you know, like. But when I think about something negative, I have to think about it constructively. And one of the things that I've heard from pros, it's not to name drop or anything, but like I hear from pros that when we give a negative review, it's generally thought to be fair, and that to me is like the best thing that I can hear about it. And it's not grumpy or it's that, you know. Once you learn a little bit about comics, you can call it like you see it a little bit, as long as you have that backed up. And I, you, like, whenever there's a criticism, I think about it in terms of, like, is it fair? Is it a fair criticism? Or is it based on my not liking J. Michael Straczynski? That's a different thing. I don't.
You know,
JMS line one, JMS
based
line
on
one.
That, there was a writer who wrote a review of Leaping Tall Buildings, and the review really became an agenda of what he doesn't like about comics. I really think you could, and even a better example, he was interviewing Len Wein about Before Watchmen, and he came out and said, these books have only been made because of a shoddy deal. And of course, what Len Wein is like, "I disagree." "Well, I never." And I mean, the interview continued. I think you could get an answer to a tough question, much like Josh was saying about a tough review, by choosing your words carefully. And I think it's far more interesting to get a diplomatic response to a diplomatic question rather than, "Why do you suck?" Or, "Why did people allow this Before Watchmen thing happen? Because Alan Moore is a god, and if he doesn't want it, then it shouldn't happen." There's a better way to get that question answered by all these creators for the specific example of Before Watchmen without insulting them or what they're working on. And it comes down to that.
That's a good answer. Does anybody have anything else? I think he won
his answer.
He was fine.
Like every year.
What's the coolest thing you know that you can't put on your podcast to tell all these? No. The best part of interviewing podcasts is before and after, by the way.
Oh, totally.
They go, "Oh, here's what I really want to tell you," and then you can't tell anybody. That's so cool. I'm totally bragging.
You want to know what happens next? No, I want to read it. Well, I'm going to tell you anyway.
Do any of you guys have any topics or anything that you'd like to bring up? We only have a little tiny bit of time left. Oh,
question.
You win.
All right. How much do you feel like part of your job is to promote the comic book industry in general?
Well, I think we're all doing it because we like it. So
yeah.
We are priming that. We wouldn't be doing it.
Lot,
I mean,
yeah,
if you don't like the comics industry, you know. I mean, we're all fans.
Yeah. Right there, it's that journalist question. I'm not a journalist because I'm not objective. I mean, like, the thing is, like, comic books... mostly an American original form of storytelling, and they can do anything. They're done by these geniuses, and they're vastly underappreciated by anything. And I have to stop. but to me, like, I like to promote comics as a thing. Now, that doesn't mean I like to promote every comic, because every comic isn't good. Every comic isn't worth the attention. But I do think about that all the time, like it, from everything on our site. Like, we want to have a thing where people will look at it and go, this isn't the stereotype of what I thought comics were. You know, comics are this wonderful art form, this wonderful storytelling method, and I think about that all the time. We can very quickly respond, but we're not supposed to, but we're renegades.
Yes.
All right, well, that's all we got. Thank you guys for coming in.
Thanks, guys.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Check our shows out. Check them out.
And that'll do it. You know, I didn't do any floor interviews. Everyone's so busy at Comic-Con. And, you know, there's so many video guys that audio sometimes gets pushed in the back. This is something that happened in radio as well. And honestly, most of my time was spent networking and booking. And believe me, lots of great dividends. Lots of interesting guests are going to be coming up in the weeks and months ahead of Word Balloon based on what happened at Comic-Con. So thank you, as always, for helping me make the trip to Comic-Con. All the League of Word Balloon listeners with their tips truly did help me this month and continue to help me, because it is expensive to go to Comic-Con, but it is worth it, because you make a lot of connections. And if the people who all said yes come through, and I think the majority of them will, we're going to have some very interesting guests on the weeks and months ahead on Word Balloon. A lot of first-timers, a lot of long-time great comic book people, hopefully some entertainment people that agreed in principle to come on. We'll see what happens. So I will be pushing forward, and I thank you for your help on that. Today's episode, as always, was brought to you by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com. Don't forget, you can get up to 42% off the standard retail price. If your orders are $50 or more, you receive free shipping, and they make it easy with some of the great deals that they have going on now. For instance, the Marvel Masterworks Golden Age Marvel Comics are 50% off. They're just $37.49. DC's archive titles, their Golden Age titles, are 50% off. Check out the deals on that. You can also get select DC trade paperbacks at 60% off while stock lasts. And from IDW, 45% off all IDW comics. In addition to that, you can also get Ultimate Comics Ultimates from John Hickman at 40% off, just $14.99. The Stuff of Legends Omnibus Hardcover Volume 1 is just $22.49. Spider-Man Ends of the Earth Hardcover, $17.99, 40% off at InStockTrades.com. And one of my favorites, again, that Showcase Rip Hunter Time Master, is just $11.99. Check out all the deals. They are waiting for you at InStockTrades.com. John Sutra saying, thanks as always for listening to Word Balloon. We really couldn't do it without you. So many people came up and said hello at the convention, and that was really great. And thank me for doing the show. Thank you for listening, as always. If you want to follow me on Twitter, it's John Word Balloon. You can follow me at Facebook under my name, John Suntress. Questions or comments about the show, reach me via email, john@wordballoon.com. Until next time, thanks for listening. Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions. Copyright 2012.